Paul's critics in Corinth were probably calling themselves the, quote, eminent apostles. Paul used that term in 2 Corinthians 11, verse 5. Now, eminence sounds like British, and it sounds like an old translation. We say it this way now, this way in America, they are the super apostles. That we don't use eminence too often in our language, but they were the super apostle. They were better orators in Corinth than Paul was. They got larger crowds in the stadium than Paul got at the church. They got a lot of money for speaking. Paul never asked for anything. They were flashy. So Paul has already said in the text that we looked at last time, Satan is flesh. Quote, false apostles, super apostles, were flashing like Satan. In 2 Corinthians 11, it says they preached another Jesus, another spirit, and another gospel. Another Jesus, probably not fully God and fully human, like a true Jesus. One person and two natures. Another Jesus is typically not fully God, the way, say, modern heretics have it, and the old Arians would have it, was God the Father is on top. He created Jesus, number two. Then below that are good angels. And false angels, even though they're evil, they're more powerful than we are. Then you have top humans, which are usually the false speakers, thought they were the top humans. Then you have the low lives like the Christians in Corinth. But another Jesus, not fully God and fully human. Another spirit, not capital H, Holy Spirit of the Trinity, but they would say a spirit's been talking to us. But it was another spirit. If supernatural, would be demonic. Another gospel is nearly always salvation by works. Not simple. He says that they might have been corrupted as Eve was from the simplicity of the message. Not a simple gospel of salvation by work, by faith, but a salvation by works. And it's usually like, which works? How many work? How many years of work? What works do they have to do that are wrong that they lose their salvation? Very, very complicated. So in 2 Corinthians 11, Paul has been giving his credentials. If this were a strictly personal insult, he would have turned the other cheek. But these people were harming others. And that's Jesus' example of getting mad at the banking tables. That's Jesus' example of calling the Pharisees a bunch of baby snakes. The Corinthians were being harmed by the false apostles. Now, the Corinthians were saved. The false apostles were not. But they were listening to these messages. And so Paul gets tough. And he has to show in here that he's way ahead of these false apostles. They were probably saying, we went to philosophical school. We have our degrees from whatever school they went to. Well, Paul went to rabbinic school. So he will argue that his education, particularly in terms of studying the Bible and studying the Old Testament, was way ahead of them. He will argue that he suffered for Jesus. They did not. He will argue he had a concern for the churches. They did not. And he will argue, which we'll try to get to it real fast, he went to heaven and back. Hardly anybody ever did that. And certainly not his critics. Come with me to 2 Corinthians 11. He's still talking about how good he is. We will look at new texts from last time. We will look at verses 16 and 17. Again, I say, let no one think me foolish, but if you do, receive me even as foolish, that I may boast a little boasting and a little while of boasting. What I am saying, I'm not saying as the Lord would, but in foolishness, in this confidence of boasting. The Lord was silent at his trial relative to a big, long defense. He did give his identity. So it is true he was as a lamb that didn't say anything, Isaiah 53. On the other hand, he did give his identity. Caiaphas asked him, "Who are you?" And he answered, "Are you the Christ, the Son of God?" And he said, "Yes, I am." And in Luke, "Yes, I am," "I" is twice, and it has the word ego in it, which is the original word for I. It's used in psychology of someone thinking about I, but yes, I really am the Son of God. I really am the Christ. So he identified himself, but he did not give a big, long defense. Most of the time when the high priest or when Paul asked him questions, he was quiet. Paul was embarrassed to have to list his credentials to these critics. The saved Corinthians, though, were tolerating their lies. So, otherwise he'd be quiet, but to protect them against false apostles, he will start to give his credentials. He's going to talk about he went to Hebrew school. They didn't. He suffered for Jesus and had concern for the churches. They didn't. And we'll get to chapter 12. He went to heaven and back. They certainly did not. Let's look at verse 18. Many boast according to the flesh, I will boast also. For you, being so wise, tolerate the foolish gladly. If you tolerate anyone who enslaves you, devours you, takes advantage of you, anyone who exalts himself, anyone who hits you in the face, to my shame I must say that we have been weak by comparison. But in whatever respect anyone else is bold, I speak in foolishness, I am just as bold myself. He can do it if he needs to. He can give his credentials if he needs to. He did not want to say how high up he was on God's tier of authority, top with all the other apostles. He's a little bit sarcastic. You tolerate the foolish, the false speakers. So tolerate me. You tolerate people who we would say eat you alive. You tolerate people who smack you in the face. So you put up with them. So I'm going to be a little bit bold. And verse 22 starts with, say, education. Verse 22. Are they Hebrews? So am I. Are they Israelite? So am I. Are they descendants of Abraham? So am I. Well, when they're used separately, Hebrew and Israelite are a little bit different stress. They often used to get back and forth, and they mean the same thing. But if you use them together, Hebrew refers to language, and Israelite refers to ethnicity. Could the critics read Hebrew? Did they know that language? Probably not. And it's really impossible to be a real expert in the Old Testament without studying Hebrew. So Paul was an expert in the Old Testament. He went to rabbi school. Where were the critics? They were not experts in Hebrew. Were they ethnically descendants of Abraham? Were they Israelites? He was. They may have said so, but it's kind of hard to believe. I mean, they're in Greece. They're Corinthians. They're false philosophers. So, right away, he went to a better school than they do. He knew the Old Testament better. He knew Hebrew. False apostles, way behind in theological study. Next, as far as being a servant of Christ and suffering for Jesus, he suffered much for Jesus. They did not and would not. Verse 23. Are they servants of Christ? I speak as if insane. He didn't really want to do this. I more so am a servant of Christ. Far more in labors, far more in imprisonment, beaten times without number, often in danger of death. 5 times I received from the Jews 39 lashes. 3 times I was beaten with rods. 1 I was stoned. 3 I was shipwrecked. A night and a day I've been floating around in the deep. I have been on frequent journeys, dangers from rivers, dangers from robbers, dangers from my countrymen, dangers from the Gentiles, dangers in the city, dangers in the wilderness or country, dangers on the sea, dangers among the false brethren. I have been in labor and hardship through many sleepless nights, in hunger and thirst, often without food, in cold and exposure. Are they ahead in education? No. He went to rabbinic school. He knew Hebrew. He knew the whole Testament. Were they ahead in suffering for Jesus? Big long list here. Even more than in the book of Acts. Book of Acts gives some of them. Book of Acts is supposedly positive. It's about the gospel going through the whole world. Acts 1:8. Jerusalem, Judea, Samaria, under the uttermost parts of the earth. So Acts is mostly positive, so it actually lists some of Paul's suffering, but doesn't list all of them. There are even more of them here listed. Beaten times without number. Well, Acts doesn't talk about times without number. It does have he got beat by a Gentile Philippian jailer with a rod. But Acts doesn't talk about Jewish people hitting him with whips. Doesn't talk about it, hitting him with whips. So here's more. And when he wrote 2 Corinthians, he still had 10 more years of suffering. So here when he talks about, I've been shipwrecked 3 times, that's before the main one in Acts, where he was going from Caesarea in prison to Rome to appeal to Caesar. So at least 4 shipwrecks total that we know of. So a longer list even than in the book of Acts. But the point is, he suffered for Jesus and his critics did not. Danger crossing the river, danger with robbers, dangers in the city, dangers in the country. Hard to know which is worse. Although I think probably New York City and Chicago and Philadelphia are more dangerous than being out on a trail somewhere. I mean, you could have trouble on a trail somewhere, walk around a ridge and there's somebody there. I walked around a ridge down here one time and there was a coyote there. So I just backed up around the ridge and waited a while. I let our high school sons have the gun, so I didn't have a gun with me, and there's a coyote, so little danger, many dangers in the city. He had dangers in both. Sleeping on the ground without food, sleeping on the ground without sufficient blanketing. The point of all this, though, is not to give a biography. The point of this is to say, I'm superior to the people that were lying to the Corinthians. He knew Hebrew, Old Testament. He went to rabbinic school. They did not. He suffered for Jesus. They did not. We could add he had concern for the churches, but I left it as a separate verse. So let's look at verse 28. Apart from such external things, there is the daily pressure on me of concern for all the churches. This brings up the difference between worry and, say, concern and pressure. Because in the Bible, worry is a sin. We might call it anxiety. Worry is a sin in the Bible, but not concern or not feeling pressure. So Paul had concern for the other churches. We should have concern for sick people, We should have concern for injured people. We should have concern, but panic and worry, not in the Bible. Be anxious for nothing, Philippians 4:6. Isaiah 26:3, thou wilt keep him in perfect peace whose mind is stayed on thee. So concern and worry, but not panic. Maybe do what we can. Sufficient for the day is the adversity thereof. Sermon on the Mount, Matthew 6:34. Take care of it one day at a time. Do what we can. And then Psalm 127, don't rise up early and stay up late out of worry. So do what one can. Concern, okay. Panic and anxiety, too far. Turn it over to God. So here's Paul. He's mainly saying he did more than they would ever do. He suffered for Jesus, and he had more concern for the churches, including the Corinthian church. Could have kept reading, but I left the last part out because it mentions a leader in Damascus. So verse 29, to catch his name. Who is weak without my being weak? Who is led into sin without my intense concern? If I have to boast, I will boast of what pertains to my weakness. The God and Father of the Lord Jesus, he who has blessed forever, knows that I am not lying. We went through all this suffering. Verse 32. In Damascus, the ethnarch under Aretas, the king guarding the city of Damascus, in order to seize me, I was let down in a basket through a window in the wall, and so escaped his hand. Aretas is one of at least 105 Bible people that are mentioned outside the Bible in other ancient books or have been found in artifacts, although I have to make specific artifacts known to be from the ground. If we add in other artifacts, they don't know for sure where they come from. There are about 125 Bible people that are outside the Bible. So no less tier one, very strong, of 105, including Aretas, and maybe as many as 125. So way ahead of his enemies. He went to rabbinic school. He knew the Hebrew and Old Testament. He suffered more than they did. They didn't suffer at all. He had concern for the Corinthians. They did not have concern. But I thought we ought to go over a little bit of chapter 12 because he went to heaven and back. That's a little bit ahead of his critics. So let's read a little bit of chapter 12 today, 2 Corinthians 12, verse 1. Boasting is necessary, have to do it, though it is not profitable, but I will go on to visions and revelations of the Lord. Optasis, I saw visions. Apocalypse, I got revelation. The unsaved Corinthian false messengers and false apostles were saying how dazzling and flashy they were in their robes, talking around in the stadium. They weren't as dazzling and flashy as heaven. They weren't superior to him. Paul did not know whether he had gone to heaven alive and come back. Elijah did that. Went to heaven alive, never died, came back on Transfiguration Day. He didn't know whether he went up alive and came back. He did not know whether he passed out and died in one of these persecutions and then went to heaven and then came back and was resurrected. But 14 years ago, one way or the other, he went to heaven and returned. Now the point here is for him mainly to say way ahead of the critics. I mean, none of the Corinthian orators could say they had gone to see heaven and come back. We must add that coming back basically is unique. In the parable of Lazarus and the rich man, can Lazarus come back and help? Luke 16:26, between us there is a great gulf, King James, Greek chasm, That would make it over into English, but I don't know, maybe not in 1611. There's a great chasm. People can't go from one place to the other. Very, very rare. Generally speaking, people don't pass. There are a few in the Bible. Samuel came back to talk with Saul, and the witch of Endor was very surprised when Samuel came back because he was expecting fake words and demons giving fake language that sounded like Samuel. But Samuel came back because God allowed it. Very, very rare. Jesus came down and went back. Moses and Elijah, they went up. They came down a little while at the transfiguration. So that makes four, and Paul is five that we know of. I think it's very, very rare. That's why we put in the parable of the rich man and Lazarus. There's a great chasm fixed. Hardly anybody comes back, but Paul did. And that's kind of the point of it. He was in the top tier eminent apostles. He spoke for God. He does not need to be put lower than these fake orators. If someone today says they're an apostle, they're a little mixed up, because an apostle had to have seen the risen Lord. And no one is alive today to have seen the risen Lord. There are no apostles today. No one today could write a book and say we've got to add this to the New Testament. In my opinion, no one today could get a message that's for everybody. I don't think people go up and come down. Relative to messages, maybe here on earth, but if so, it's for that person only and not for all kinds of other people. There are what we call near-death experiences. That's where the person isn't really gone. They're still in this world, but they're real close to near-death. I've been around a couple of them, not too many. I think I can talk about Dr. Gormley, the owner of Broom Optical. He was in a coma for between 2 and 3 weeks. He did wake up and live, and he lived 3 more years. And he wouldn't talk about it very much, but once in a while you'd go in the house and sit with him, and he remembered people visiting while he was in a coma. He didn't look like he's looking to me. His eyes are going. He remembered what color shirts they had on, remember what they said, Bible verses, and so on and so forth. So what you have, I think, is a near-death experience, but not the same as here, where they go all the way to heaven and come back. That basically is a very short list. Hardly ever happens, a great gulf fix. People don't go up and come back down. Maybe near death. If there is a message, it's for them and not for everybody. There are no apostles. So no one can say God has given me a message that all people everywhere have to do. Verses 2 through 4, we'll work on it a little bit. I'm not sure I won't have to come back to it later. Verse 2. I know a man in Christ who 14 years ago, whether in the body I do not know or out of the body I do not know, God knows, such a man was caught up into the third heaven. I know how such a man, whether in the body or apart from the body, I do not know, God knows, was caught up into paradise and heard inexpressible words which a man is not permitted to speak. And he's not going to say them. Reference to third heaven. The Talmud has seven heavens. The Muslim Quran has seven heavens. But the Bible only has three. They're not that complicated. One is the sky. They would call that the heaven. The second one is the stars and the planets. They would call that heaven. The third is the presence of God or the heavenly city. So in the Bible, three, not seven. We know the Bible word for heaven, although we spell it different. They would spell it O-U-R-Uranus. O-U-R-Uranus. That's how they would spell heaven. caught up into paradise. That means snatched. It's used of the rapture. I drive around, I sometimes listen to the Catholic channel, and this week they were attacking literally us, anybody who uses a Ryrie Study Bible. They were attacking anybody who uses a Ryrie Study Bible on the Catholic channel this week because it talks about being snatched up into heaven. Can't have that. Can't have the 1 Thessalonians 4, well, Jesus will come in the air and all believers everywhere are snatched up into heaven, because that is what 1 Thessalonians 4 says. And so the Ryrie Study Bible has notes on that. So they have to warn everybody not to read a Ryrie Study Bible. It never talks about being caught up into heaven in the Bible. Here in 1 Thessalonians 4. They go up into paradise. There are too many paradise. One of them. On the cross, Jesus told the thief, "Today you will be with me in paradise." 2 Thessalonians 2 talked about the overcomers. This is the victory that overcomes the world, our faith. All those with faith will eat of the tree of life, which is in paradise. Paradise like a garden. So somewhere in the heavenly city, it seems like plants and fruit. Although the main thing here is not to teach about heaven, it's to teach about Paul had top authority. Way ahead of the critics. They are the super apostles, they said. But he knew Hebrew. He went to the Hebrew school. They did not know Hebrew. He suffered for Jesus with a big, long list of accomplishments. They did not. He had concern for the churches. They did not. And so even though he doesn't say what he heard in heaven, can't talk about it, he went to heaven and back, which is a very short list. But his main point is, he's way ahead of anybody else. Way ahead of the false messengers then, way ahead now. We get our authority from the apostles or those that worked with them that wrote the Bible. There are no apostles now. Nobody's of that top tier. Nobody can write another Bible book. The musicians, please come.